So the question was, how do we determine what the strengths of the systems were? So what we did initially, and so I didn't do the initial prior to field work, but the National District Attorneys Association basically mapped out the resources in every country of how many, you know, schools there were, how many high schools, public schools, college systems, higher education, how many doctors or community health workers there are, hospitals, clinics, etc. What are their sectors? What is the industry like? You know, what is the break? So they mapped this out. We got these huge packets that we had to read. So that was just the data, the objective data. And then we went and did the, when we went to do the groundwork, we basically were talking with people nonstop and getting their insights and meeting with people, getting their buy-in, hearing their concerns, seeing what they thought were the main issues and how they could, did they see themselves in this issue? What were their thoughts on combating it or participating in the regional efforts? So that's how we did it. It's a lot of, you know this, it's stakeholder buy-in. Oh yeah. So that was actually that's a great question. The question is, what kind of strengths were there for the community-based organizations? Actually, so there's two that stand out. One, it was in Marshall Islands. It's a community organization called WUTME, or Women United Together Marshall Islands, and they actually were very strong on domestic violence, and they were pushing to get a domestic violence bill passed by the legislature. So when we went to talk, they were actually the strongest sector in the Marshall Islands. Public health was, and medical was actually not very strong in the Marshall Islands. One, because of the workforce issue. Two, because of the language issue. There's actually not a word in Marshallese to define sex. So basically, how they say it in Marshallese, it means the bad thing. So imagine if you're a physician or a public health provider or community health worker, and you go and you want to talk about this issue, and you have to constantly refer to it as the bad thing. Well, that's already framing and rooting the patient's ideas about, you know, what happened to them. So that was very difficult. And so WUTME was doing a lot of work with domestic violence, and they had done a big advocacy campaign, which they had never done before, with postcards and artwork from different victims, and they mailed it all to the legislators before the vote, and it didn't pass, but it came close. And so they were building on that that campaign to incorporate for human trafficking work. Oh, but Art Chen has a question. Thanks, Art. Dr. Chen's question was, given the breakthrough of raising the age of consent in Chuuk from 13 to 18, did we analyze what were the components of getting that to happen? What's that? Of accomplishing that. We haven't done that analysis to that extent, but I think really it was the people on the ground who really pushed that forward, because they're there, still pushing for it, right? I think we had a small role to play, because when we were there in Chuuk, they asked us to come with them to the legislature to present, and so they had a special session of legislature, and our team went there, and we brought the women's group from Chuuk, as well as the public health department, and they brought some of their patients who were sexually exploited minors. And it was a very interesting dynamic, because the foreigners got to set up at the front, were wearing our Western clothes, All the women were sitting at the back. All the men were at this grand, the central table around. And they were actually quite aggressive to the women's groups when they asked questions, and more deferential to us, which was a little bit strange. But we were able to support what their words were and what their sentiment were, so I think we helped bolster them. People are watching. People are watching what you do, and they're on the right side. So I think that helped a little. But really, it's the ground. People on the ground keep pushing. Okay, do you want to hear from me again or somebody else? Okay, she wants me to go. All right, so my next topic, how did I get into this work? DMST, utilizing an identification tool to screen for commercial sexual exploitation of children in a community health center. I got into this work because I am a family doctor, and I worked at a community health center in Oakland, California, where Dr. Chen also works. So he's throwing me easy questions. No disclosures. However, this presentation, this research project, is in review for the Journal of Applied Research on Children. So don't publish any of this stuff afterwards. This is where we work. That's Asian Health Services. This is the clinic that I was directing for the past 5 years, Frank Kang Medical Center. And so, how do we get involved in this work? Why is a family doctor from a community health center working on human trafficking issues? Well, it goes back to Asian Health Services and Community Health Centers. So we were founded in 1974, and community health centers, by definition, respond to the needs of the community because we have a community board of directors. So 51% of any community health center has to have a board of directors that is a majority of patients. So we're supposed to be responsible to and accountable to our patients' needs. In 1996, we started a teen program. That was in response, a reproductive health education program. And that was in response to a rise in the teenage pregnancy rates of Asian American girls in our county, probably around the time Mark was being a full-time family doctor there. And then not giving out birth control pills. Just kidding. So we started this reproductive health program in order to, provide that kind of education. Once we started giving that education to the community members, the patients started asking for services. They wanted to be seen by the doctor. They just want to learn about their bodies and learn about birth control and STIs and stuff. They actually wanted to get checked. Imagine that. They wanted to get checked for pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections and such. So we started a teen clinic just for the youth. Once we did that, well, shoot, everything opened up. And from 2001 to 2003, we started to see these trends of our patients, mostly Southeast Asian young girls coming in who would eventually over time, and as we became more aware of the issue, would disclose that they were being commercially sexually exploited on the streets of Oakland. And we looked around and we didn't know what to do with this issue. And so in 2004, we started a community-based organization called Monte Estrella, specifically to attend to the needs of commercially sexually exploited young Southeast Asian girls. When we had looked around, we saw that they couldn't get services, and there were no services for youth unless they had been arrested and gone through a criminal trial or a prosecution for being prostituted children. And so we started this program, Bonte Stray, with other community organizers. Because the physicians and the providers in our clinic didn't really know how to address this issue or how to ask the questions, we created a screening tool, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit more today. A screening and identification tool to help clinicians ask the questions, how do you ask it, when do you ask it, and what do you do after someone discloses. In 2008, we started a Alameda County Sexually Exploited Minor Network Health Committee. In 2009, we partnered with the National District Attorneys Association. In 2011, we started giving training to the school district so that the educators could know how to address this problem. 2012, the Institute of Medicine commissioned a report on domestic minor sex trafficking, 2013. I met these guys, and we started field trafficking. And then we also worked with the California Child Welfare Council on the foster kids who were being sexually exploited. And in 2014, most of these folks up here with me were helping to do a administration on Children and Family and Office of Women's Health pilot training to healthcare professionals on human trafficking. So that's how we got involved. So this is Oakland. The green line is where there's street prostitution for adults, where adult women are prostituted on the streets, but also where there occurs commercial sexual exploitation of children. The purple dots are where our clinics are located. So we were uniquely positioned to see some of these issues that were happening on the ground. Our identification protocol is free for anyone to download or use. We have never not limited it for people. We have always shared it. You can go to our website, Asian Health Services, and you can download it if you want to adapt it or try it out or use it for your research or whatever. It's free. And we just ask that you attribute it, to Asian Health Services. So this is what it looks like. We give a range, we give a number of risk factors or risk indicators that we thought at the time we developed it could indicate that a child was commercially sexually exploited. Hi, welcome. I think there might be a chair up here. And then we trained our physicians, our nurse practitioners and our providers to ask questions in a very non-judgmental way. And then we said, if someone says that they have been engaged in a commercial sexual act, what do we do afterwards? How do we give them resources? How do we reframe the issue? How do we talk to them? So that's our protocol. This is what we studied. So we achieved IRB approval to look at our charts after we had used this and piloted this screening protocol. We got IRB approval, and so we did a chart review, a retrospective cohort chart review, from 2008, after the pilot was done, to 2011. We ended it at 2011 because that's when we decided as clinicians to just call for universal screening. And so we'll get to that in a second. So it's a retrospective cohort chart review. Our patients from 2008 to 2011, it was a chart abstraction. We didn't design it prospectively to experiment on our patients. But we wanted to see what we had and what was the prevalence and what was the odds of people having risk factors and indicating that they were sexually exploited. We had 626 patients at that time. We were only able to get 621 medical charts because five of them were somewhere lost in medical records. That won't happen now anymore because we have electronic health records. Right, Art? Right. Maybe. And we excluded any just follow-up clinical visits that were strictly for birth control refill or prenatal visits if the initial visit had already been abstracted. This is how we did it. We standardized our chart abstraction, trained specific abstractors. We got the data from our chart notes, our progress notes, and our community health worker youth program intake reports. We had a second abstract to review the data to look for any outliers or errors. And we managed the data on Microsoft Access, and we abstracted the number of data, key fields and data points. We analyzed it using Stata and R software with different statistical methods in order to find out the odds ratios of a risk factor. Okay. So this is the results, the demographic results of the 621 patients. We just wanted to include this to show that even though we're Asian Health Services, the issue doesn't just apply to Southeast Asian or Asian youth. It applies to all different, everybody. Anyone can be at risk. are a part of the high-risk population. So we see patients in all different races and ethnicities. Of the 621 patients, the screening protocol was applied to 177 of them. So this is before we had called for universal screening, and we had trained our providers, but left it up to their discretion on whether they're going to ask the questions, depending on their time. Doctors always hate it when you tell them you have to do something, and they only have 15 minutes of time to do it in. So they decide what they're going to do. Sorry about that. So of the 177, 13 of them self-reported being commercially sexually exploited, and the rest didn't. So independent predictors. So we took that 177, and we looked at those who had these risk indicators and those who didn't. So the 13 compared to the 164. And what we found, these were the risk indicators we had put on our screening protocol. So what we found, so these are the ones that were significant. History of STI, sexually active with more than two partners. I'm good. I'm almost done, don't worry. And greater than 10 lifetime sexual partners, as well as more than two of these combined risk factors. So these are the ones that had significant odds ratios that could be associated with being CSEC or CSEC causing that, either way, causation or reverse causation. Then we said, well, hey, what about the patients that we didn't screen? What was their risk factor indicators? And were we doing a good job of screening? And so if you look at the ones that are bolded here, well, hey, we didn't screen for a lot of them that had these risk factors when we probably should have. Now, you saw that the prevalence was very low. It was about 7%. With universal screening, it'll probably go down lower. But let me ask you this. Is the risk of one young girl or youth who's being trafficked worth just asking the question, a simple question? So we think it is worth it, and we should do it. So a major takeaway, number one, some youth will disclose commercial sexual exploitation if they're asked in a clinical setting. So if you remember anything from this presentation, these last three slides, some youth will disclose commercial sexual exploitation if they are asked in a clinical setting. Major takeaway number two, there are clinical risk factors associated with commercial sexual exploitation of children. But applying a risk-based screening is difficult for providers and patients. Right? If you're just going to ask if you think you are sexually exploited or you, and I leave out everybody else, and there's somebody else in the room who is, but we didn't ask them, well, we're not doing our jobs correctly. So major takeaway number three, most important. We call for universal screening of patients. So that's our major takeaway. So that's all I got. And this is what we learned from the SOAR trafficking. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So let's go together.